Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Quinn et al. Titled, Cardiovascular and Thermoregulatory Dysregulation Over 24 Hours Following Acute Heat Stress in Rats. This article published online June 12, 2015, as part of our call for papers on cardiovascular responses to environmental stress. Joining me today are guest editor Michael Falvo, authors Gerald Audette and Nisha Charkudian, and content expert Matthew Brothers. Let's get started.
So thanks, Kara, for the introduction. We're excited to have both authors on today as well as a content expert. And so I thought we'd first start with maybe an overview of the methodology and main findings. So Jerry, if you could take us through that, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. So the main finding of this paper is that it's really a common misconception that core temperature is the primary determinant of heat stroke severity. However, our findings and findings of other labs suggest that's not really the case. What we're finding is that cardiovascular parameters and cardiovascular dysfunction, specifically things like pertaining to heart rate, blood pressure, EKG abnormalities even, are what is at the core of heat stroke pathology and what's really driving the pathophysiology. And while it's been known for some time now from clinical cases and other animal models that cardiovascular dysfunction during heat is a key component, there has been very little work on what happens after heat stroke, especially in this context of the cardiovascular system and the failures of the cardiovascular system. So the findings in this manuscript really highlight that there are significant potentially pathological cardiovascular abnormalities that persist through at least 24 hours of recovery, which match very well with severity. And that is those with the most severe heat stroke, organ damage, systemic inflammation, are also those with the worst prognosis and the largest alterations in these cardiovascular parameters.
And Mike, if I could just follow up on that, I think an important point that Jerry was highlighting there was that the variability in terms of responsiveness to the same core temperature. So when we talk about the misconceptions of core temperature itself being an important variable, it is. The point is from our study that there's a lot of variability. All the rats were heated to the same core temperature, 42 degrees. They all got the exact same stimulus as far as that was concerned, but the responses were quite variable, where we had a group that had severe pathology and pathophysiology, a group that responded moderately, and a group that had very mild responses. And that's very similar to the variability that we see in human patient populations.
That's exactly right.
Thanks for adding that, Nisha. I agree with you. I think there is probably a variety of factors that can contribute to this response. I think maybe we can turn it over maybe to Matt to comment on his experience in human patients, to maybe describe some of those other factors that may be involved.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for inviting me. I agree that there is a lot of variability. And as Jerry correctly mentioned, there's a lot of variability within his studies and in the rat models. And we have seen that, we and others, but in a lot of my research where we saw a lot of variability in the responses. Mainly, we were looking at orthostatic tolerance, and this has significant implications for some of the cardiovascular parameters that Jerry and Nisha briefly mentioned. We do see a pretty wide variety in the human population in an individual's ability to withstand an orthostatic challenge, and particularly when heat stressed. However, it's very important, and that's one of the things that I took when I was reading this and digging around into the literature a little bit more, is the ability to predict that, what makes one of these rats fall into the severe population versus some of the rats that fall into the mild population. I think that has significant implications for not only predicting, but also treating individuals in this heat stress condition.
Thanks, Matt. If I could maybe follow up with Jerry and Nisha to talk a little bit more about maybe the a priori selection of the mechanisms that were of interest for this particular study, particularly those mechanisms that govern the heart rate and arterial pressure responses that you observed.
So if you look in this paper, the last figure, the last panel, we're looking at a few different things that have to do with two very important mechanisms that we think are at play here in heat stroke, and that is reactive oxygen species and the systemic inflammatory cascade. The systemic inflammatory cascade has been shown to be important in heat stroke in both human and animal models. And we really think that there's a lot to be said about being able to blunt this response and potentially blunt heat stroke pathology. But there has not been a whole lot done on reactive oxygen species. And we think that this is the preceding event that's leading to the inflammatory cascade. Now, the inflammatory cascade in this setting could be contributing to the vasodilation that could be driving some of these decreases in total mean arterial pressure that could then be resulting in the tachycardia in sort of a loop. We didn't necessarily tease that out completely, but there's certainly strong evidence that that could be at play here.
Right. I agree with what Jerry said. I think the way that I was looking at this as an autonomic physiologist myself was that it really does tie in with what we understand about the arterial baroreflex. So although we don't have all the pieces yet as far as the actual data, if we think about some of the inflammation, as Jerry said, as causing peripheral vasodilation through, for example, an inducible NOS, nitric oxide-mediated vasodilation, that would result in perhaps a profound decrease in total peripheral resistance, which would elicit baroreflex-mediated increases in heart rate as an attempt to offset that and maintain arterial pressure. And we think what's happening in the severe group is that tachycardia occurs, but it just isn't enough. So if you look at the mean arterial pressure values for the severe group, they stay quite low throughout the 24-hour period. And interestingly, I think that also is related to the core temperature, which goes quite low and stays quite low in the severe group as well, because as we know, peripheral vasodilation on the surface of the body can result in increases in heat loss to the environment and therefore drops in core temperature. So I think this is a great example of how the integration between cardiovascular regulation and thermoregulation really comes into play in these different groups and in this variability in how the system responds to extreme heat stress in the aftermath of that heat stress. Just to point out, when we're comparing the rat studies that we did here to the human studies, it is important to keep in mind that these rat heat stresses are extremely severe. The reason we do these studies in rats is because we wouldn't do them. They wouldn't be ethical to do in humans.
So Jerry and Nisha, the paper did a great job about describing a translational perspective. And for myself as a clinical human researcher, I was wondering if you can comment a little bit more on the kind of the clinical implications of this work and where it might go from here.
I think that there's two populations I always think of when I think of how this work's going to translate. The first and probably the biggest population is that of the elderly and those with failing cardiovascular systems. I think as many people know, cardiovascular disease is one of the primary killers and the primary components leading to other diseases in the United States and throughout the world. And I think what this data shows is that if you are already compromised cardiovascularly, you may not be able to compensate the way the mild and moderate animals can in this study, and that you may really be at danger of having secondary effects after heat stroke. And actually, in fact, what we think is that a lot of heat stroke gets underreported, specifically because a lot of these things get reported as cardiovascular events when actually maybe what pushed the person into an MI or other cardiovascular failure could have been the actual heat stress and the heat stroke. And then the second population I always think about is those who are undergoing exertion, not just in terms of athletes, and while that may be important, yes, but those who are out doing physical labor. So those who are already stressed cardiovascular-wise doing, you know, outdoor labor, firemen, the military, those kinds of populations, they may not be able to respond appropriately to these stresses when they are already dipping into their cardiovascular reserve. They just simply they do not have the output to compensate for some of these things that we're seeing.
So Jerry or Nisha, do you guys feel that there's any way, at least currently in the research or any potential in the future, to predict how an individual would respond to a severe heat stress? I would think that this would have significant implications in a variety of scenarios, occupational as well as military type scenarios. Do you think there's any way based on this work or anything that lined up in the future that you could predict responses?
Yeah. So Matt, there is one thing that we have come up with that we think is very promising. We actually have a paper in revisions now, and that is the cardiovascular marker CTNI. So cardiovascular troponin. It's an integral protein for the structure of the heart muscle. And what happens is when the heart is damaged, this protein is released into circulation. It's been a very, very powerful marker of cardiovascular failure for other conditions in the clinic. And what we're finding is that those animals with the highest levels of circulating CT9 at the moment of collapse, so at TC max or maximal torr temperature, those are the ones that do worse at 24 hours. Those are the ones that do worse at 5 days. So what we're finding is that we can use CTNI potentially even during heat stroke to determine how bad you are at 24 hours. Now, along those lines, what's even more interesting is that there are these things called point of care tests or point of care strips, POCs. You'll often see them in the literature stated as POCs. And then these little cartridges that have laminar flow immunoassays. And we can take a couple of drops of blood and we can measure your CTNI, and I can tell you how bad you're going to be 24 hours later. Or at least that's the hope. So what we're finding in this rat model is that we are predicting with between 92 and 100% sensitivity and specificity how bad you're going to be 24 hours with a single sample taken at TC Max using this protein CTNI.
Jerry, that sounds really awesome.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
So I want to commend the authors from USARium on a novel and important study, and thank you for contributing to our special call on this cardiovascular response to environmental stress. I wanted to thank Jerry and Nisha for joining us today to discuss their work, and I also wanted to thank Matt Brothers for being our content expert today. So I hope you've enjoyed this interesting podcast, and hopefully you'll look forward to reading the paper, and I'm going to turn it back over to Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.